on the air.
You've tuned into the Mark Harrington Show, sponsored by Created Equal.
Mark is training a new generation of leaders
to take on the culture of death and win.
You don't like abortion, don't have one.
The only thing that can be said to be objective truth is that there is no objective truth.
It does come out in one piece.
I would argue that we certainly are not all created equal.
And now, here's Mark.
That's right. We got big news coming out of Ohio, where the Ohio Senate has passed the abortion ban on dismemberment abortions here in the state of Ohio. This happened yesterday, folks. This is breaking news. Big news here in the state of Ohio, and for that matter, across the country. For the first time in this state, we've seen a dismemberment abortion passed by our Ohio Senate. Now it goes to the House of Representatives, probably later this summer, and then hopefully to the governor's desk for signature. And Ohio hopefully will be one of the first states in the nation to ban dismemberment abortions. Folks, this is huge news. We are now moving from, you know, a partial birth abortion ban, which took effect in the mid-2000s, I think it was 2004, to now 20-week bans, which are being introduced and put into law all across America, and now to these dismemberment bans, which target second trimester abortions. And here's the value of the ban, and we're going to get into this in detail, but the value of the ban is this. There is no other type of method that abortionists use to kill second trimester babies. There just isn't. And so ostensibly, this is a ban on second trimester abortions, where you could say the partial birth abortion ban did not ban late-term abortions because there are other methods. In fact, late-term abortions were generally performed using a dismemberment method. So this is big news, big news. And we're going to be talking about it here on the Mark Harrington Show today. We're also going to be talking about some of the objections to the law. We know that what the pro-abortion folks think. You know, they came out in force at our hearing this week, dressed as handmaids. We know about that. We talked about that last week. This Handmaid's Tale, they came out in force with these handmaids outfits, which, by the way, look like the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, that's really what they look like. Hoods and capes, not a good image for the abortion movement. But they came out to the hearing. Of course, we did as well, wearing shirts with a preborn baby on the front with the words, "Don't dismember me." So we're gonna be talking about the bill. We're gonna talk about some of the objections, not from the pro-abortion side. We understand they're against everything. They're gonna be for dismembering. In fact, it was interesting to listen to the testimony from the National Dismemberment Action League this week, or NARAL, defending dismembering humans. I mean, it's hard to imagine that someone actually can do that, but they did, and looked completely cold and callous in doing it. So we're going to leave that aside, except for hopefully later on we're going to play some video, some sound, some video from the actual testimony on the Senate floor yesterday from a pro-abortion candidate. So hopefully we get to that. But we do want to deal with some of the objections before we move on to other things. Also on today's show, we're going to be talking about the projects that we're launching this summer. In relationship to the defunding of Planned Parenthood, we have a big project we're about ready to launch here, which is going to take effect here in July, along with protests that we are planning for the WNBA's Storm, the Seattle Storm women's basketball team, that is going to be donating $5 of its ticket sales, of each individual ticket, to Planned Parenthood, and how this is an important thing that we've got to deal with. So we're going to be talking about that. Also, we want to make sure that we cover the fact that we're going to be joining up with Operation Save America this week, or this month in July, as part of their national event for such a time as this in Louisville, Kentucky. Why are we going to Kentucky? Because it's one of about five or six states that has one remaining abortion clinic. And so we're going to do all we can to try to shut that down. But before we get into those events this summer, let's deal with some of these objections that we get on occasion in regards to bills like the dismemberment abortion ban. We get this from those who hold to an all or nothing view of dealing with abortion legislation. Let me just say this. For the most part, 99% of the pro-life movement believes in a gradual or incremental rolling back of abortion law as a means to ending it altogether. There's not one person I know in this movement that simply wants to regulate abortion. There's nobody that I know. That isn't what they're about. That isn't what they want to do. Although we get accused of that, that all we want to do is regulate it. We don't want to end it. We don't call it murder. We're on the take. We just want to raise money. It's all about our, keeping a job, all that kind of. I don't know anybody in this movement. I've been around for 20 some years that feels this way, that's motivated that way. But having said that, there's still a few outliers out there, a few folks who still think that we have to ban abortion altogether or we should do nothing. None of the incremental steps that we're taking in this movement have any validity to these folks. But for the most part, they're outliers. I mean, it's a non-debate, really, in the movement because we have settled on this strategy politically as a whole, as a movement. Except for a few who feel like we should just do all or nothing. Folks, just for up front, I'm an and both guy. I've supported every abortion ban that's been introduced that I'm aware of since I've been doing this, since I've been fighting abortion. And I'll continue to do that. I supported the Ohio abortion ban. I supported all the bans that have been put forward across the United States. I'll continue to do that. I believe we need to be firing all cylinders and not be putting all our eggs in one basket, whether it be the incremental basket, if you want to call it, or the all or nothing basket. But anyway, let me briefly deal with some of these objections that have been brought up regarding this bill, particularly the dismemberment abortion ban here in Ohio. Let me deal with that. Of course, those who are the all or nothing folks say that it doesn't go far enough. Well, I mean, who doesn't agree with that? We all want abortion to be banned entirely. Completely, absolutely. We want it abolished. They'll say that it doesn't go far enough because it allows or sanctions or explicitly determines that other abortion methods are lawful. Here's the deal. This bill doesn't make aspiration abortions, suction curettage abortions, legal. This bill doesn't say, oh, those were illegal. Now we're going to make suction aspiration abortions or suction curettage abortions, DNC abortions, legal. It doesn't say that. They were already legal. I mean, they were already there before we attempted to ban dismemberment abortions. So we're not making them legal. That would be immoral if we passed a law saying, oh, they're illegal now, this type of an abortion. A DNC abortion, suction curettage or aspiration, vacuum aspiration. These are now legal, and we are going to pass a law to make them legal. That would be immoral. The fact that they're already legal is not on us. It's not on us. That's the current law. So that's number one. This bill allows it because it's already law. We're trying to roll back abortion, doing it by all these types of incremental means. The other thing is just on the practical level, those who say that that abortionists are going to just shift from using a dismemberment method for second trimester abortions 14 weeks and up, they're just going to switch to a different method, and they cite the DNC or vacuum aspiration abortions as the means in which they may now kill second trimester abortions, simply don't understand the abortion methods. They just don't. Let me just demonstrate this, okay? A dismemberment abortion, I'm going to get my model out here. This is a 20-week baby. Now, again, most second trimester abortions are done on children that are smaller than this. They're probably about half the size, but they go down to maybe 13 or 14 weeks. But just for the sake of argument, let's assume this is the typical baby that would be dismembered in a second trimester abortion using the D&E procedure, the dilation and evacuation method, or dismemberment abortion. In that procedure, as I demonstrated last week, the abortionist uses they use forceps to tear apart the baby, one limb by limb, arm, hand, leg, torso, and then crush the head and remove it. There's the diagram, right? This is how it works. It's a method to which you actually dismember the baby in utero and then reassemble the parts on a table next to the victim, the woman, the second victim, if you will, and actually assemble the parts, but you dismember the baby, okay? So let's say that method is banned, which, by the way, is the only way that they kill second trimester abortions currently. They don't use another method. It's not like the partial birth abortion where you could say, oh, they could use dismemberment abortion methods in the late trimesters. That's true. So the fact that an aspiration abortion or a vacuum aspiration abortion or DNC or whatever you want to call it would be used for a second trimester abortion is just false. And here's why. You got a baby about this big, maybe a little bit smaller, and in a DNC abortion, you use a curette like this, to scrape around the lining of the uterus to free up the baby. Well, first of all, how are they going to do that with an instrument like this? It's just not going to work. It's just not going to work. Then, assuming they were able to do that, right, they're going to take a vacuum aspirator like this. Now, this is a manual aspirator. This is obviously not a vacuum aspirator, but the curette is the same at the end, right? The catheter is the same. Now, let me ask you, do you think that an abortionist trying to kill a second trimester baby using this method is going to be successful? How is the abortionist going to get the different parts through this thin catheter? It's just not going to happen. So even if they try to use a DNC type method, vacuum aspiration on second trimester abortions, it wouldn't be successful. It just isn't going to fit through the catheter. So the idea that, oh, they're just going to use a DNC abortion to perform second trimester abortions is just false. They just don't know what they're talking about. So ostensibly, a dismemberment ban on abortion and second trimester abortions is going to ban the procedure. Now, they may try to cause fetal demise, as they call it, and that kind of thing, by inserting digoxin into the baby's heart and causing the baby to die prior to delivery. We understand at some level that abortionists, if they want to find a way to kill a baby, they're going to find a way. But the fact that there is no other method currently being used or even being considered other than the D&E, dilation evacuation method, tells me that they are not going to be able to perform second trimester abortions in any other way right now, at least as far as we know. And in fact, testimony they were at the hearing the other day, some of those from the National Dismemberment Action League were asked what other type of procedure might be used. And of course, they said there isn't one. There isn't one. So, yeah, I'm not saying this piece of legislation is perfect. Obviously, it's not. It doesn't end all abortions. But it could end, for the most part, second trimester abortions, because right now there is no other method that we're aware of that abortionists would use. And they certainly would not use a vacuum aspirator or the DNC method using a curette. They just wouldn't, because those are used on first trimester abortions that occur to babies that are about this size. Well, you could see how that might work, see, where the aspirator, I mean the catheter would be able to suck the baby's parts through this narrow tube after the baby's parts are scraped from the from the lining of the uterus. So we could see that working in a first trimester abortion, but we would not see that type of procedure work in a second trimester abortion. It's just not going to. So this idea that they're going to use this procedure to replace the dismemberment type of procedure is just flat out false on its face. So along with the RU-46, again, this RU-46 is legal. I mean, we're not making it legal by passing this law. It just happens to be legal. We're not culpable for that. All right. So that to me, those are the two major objections that I've heard out there, that they're going to just use a D&C type method on a second trimester baby rather than a dismemberment method, and that it doesn't go far enough, which we would agree it doesn't. But the whole idea is that we're trying to roll back abortion one step at a time. I don't necessarily believe you do it by procedure, but we have been successful in doing it by the age, 20 weeks, and now going hopefully to the younger children. Okay, so let me just deal real quickly, hopefully. I don't want to take too much time on this because, like I say, I think it's really a non-debate in our movement. But every once in a while, people bring up these questions about it. And so I want to deal with the question of the methodology, if you will, the strategy of the pro-life movement. Historically, now for so many years, we've used what I consider to be, and I concur with my friend Clark Forsyth, is what is called political prudence. Political prudence. Clark has written a book, and I think he's the foremost spokesperson for this type of tactic, if you will, or method in rolling back abortion in order to eventually outlaw it. And he wrote this book called The Politics for the Greatest Good, The Case for Prudence in the Public Square. And he makes the argument that it's about prudence. And what he says about prudence is this, political prudence, another being a pragmatist, being realistic. He looks at this and he says, first of all, it works. I mean, the fact of the matter is we have made progress. Now, it's awfully slow, gradual progress. But if you look at where we were, say, 10, even 15 years ago to where we are today, as far as abortion law across the country, no one in their right mind would say we're not making progress, that we're not rolling back all these laws one at a time across the country. The fact is that this has actually been documented. It's been documented by a good friend of mine as well, Dr. Michael New, who is a professor at the University of Michigan, who has done several studies on this. And in 2014, he wrote a study which he entitled Analyzing the Effects of Anti-Abortion Legislation in the Post-Casey Era. And in that, he talks about how these types of laws, these incremental, if you want to call, or gradual laws, or if you want to call it prudence, have led to the saving of thousands of children. He mentions in this study that parental involvement laws, when those are instituted in states, that leads to a 10 to 15% decrease in the abortions in that state. That's just parental involvement. Medicaid funding. We're talking a lot about Planned Parenthood funding, right, at the federal level. We're talking about the Hyde Amendment a lot nowadays. When Medicaid funds are restricted to exclude funding of abortion, that has, according to Dr. Michael New, decreased abortions by 10%. So the fact is that prudence, political prudence, works. It works. And so I am of the mind that we try to save as many babies using prudent measures like a dismemberment ban and parental involvement, whatever you want to call it, 20-week bans, bans on gestational ages, and whatever it is, whatever makes sense to continue to roll back Roe v. Wade, that we save as many babies as we can on the way to saving them all, which is our ultimate goal. Again, we're not about regulating abortion. We're about ending it, and you end it incrementally. And Dr. Michael New has made it, evident through his studies that incremental types of laws save children. So my question to the all or nothing folks out there, which there aren't that many, but to the all or nothing people out there, what would you do with those babies? What about them? Would you say, oh, well, I don't agree with a dismemberment abortion ban, or I don't believe in parental involvement bans, or I don't believe that we should be banning abortion at 20 weeks or restricting funds to Planned Parenthood because it's immoral, because it doesn't end abortion altogether all at once. And therefore, I'm willing to sacrifice some children for the hopes, and it is a hope because there's no guarantee, for the hope of saving them all at once. So in other words, the all or nothing folks are willing to sacrifice some children in the hopes that they're going to save all of them somewhere down the road. So all these years are passing, right? Babies are continuing to die as they hold out for this all or nothing strategy that's going to end abortion in one fell swoop. I mean, that's really it. And Michael New, he documents it. That you can't argue that these incremental laws have saved babies. And our goal is to save children, right? I mean, on the way to saving them all, we ought to be saving some. It's not principled to allow any of them to die. And if we have an opportunity to save some of them, we should. It's not biblical to allow any of them to die, and we should save some on the way to saving them all. So it's far from immoral to take an incrementalist or prudent view of legislation. In fact, it's the most prudent and moral thing to do, because you're actually saving children on the way to saving them all. Secondarily, when it comes to this issue of political prudence, this law, by the way, is going to be struck down and held as unconstitutional. It defies Roe v. Wade in many respects, because now we're dealing with second trimester abortions, which we've never done before legislatively, except for some of the abortion bans that have been instituted and fail or have been introduced and have yet to come to become law, or say the heartbeat bills and that kind of thing. But second trimester abortions, dismemberment abortions, have never been attempted to be banned, and they are going to run in the face of Roe versus Wade, which is a good thing. We want to challenge Roe. So here's the thing. A lot of folks say that, oh, if you only ask the legislature to do a little bit, that's all they're going to do, and they won't do what they really should do because you haven't asked them to do it. In the state of Ohio, I've seen this over the last 15 years. In 2006, we introduced a ban on abortion, HB 228, House Bill 228 in the state of Ohio. That was 11 years ago. Since then, that got one hearing, by the way. Since then, just last year, even though it took 5 years, we had the heartbeat bill on the governor's desk to be signed. Now, he vetoed that, but the heartbeat bill would have saved 92% of all the children in the state of Ohio. Yet the all or nothing crowd was against that. And go figure. How is that principle? How is that loving your neighbors yourself? Saying, I'm going to hold out to save all of them. And in the holding out, I'm realizing that some are going to pass. Some are going to die. And I'm willing to accept that. Tell those children that that's a viable strategy. Why don't we fire on both cylinders? Why don't we try to end abortion incrementally, rolling it back, and also try to pass laws to end it altogether? By the way, this bill will be probably held up in court, just like a heartbeat bill would, or an abortion ban bill would, like our 2006 ban, just like some of the bans that are being introduced in the state of Texas and Oklahoma and others. They're all going to be enjoyed by the court. And you know what? That's good, because it's not good that it's being, you know, enjoined by the court. It should be put into law. But the fact that we're going to confront Roe v. Wade up front is a good thing. And the dismemberment law would do that. So that's prudence. Now, let me finish the prudence aspect. I know they were going to go long a little bit today, but I hope this is worthwhile for you. I want to read a little piece from Clark Forsythe's book. By the way, if you're interested in this debate and you like politics and you want to kind of, you know, understand the in-house debate that sometimes occur amongst pro-lifers, then this is the book to read. This is the book to read. Anyway, he says this about prudence. He says this, because we live in a world of constraints. See, he's a realist. Because we live in a world of constraints, prudence tells us that if we cannot prohibit a social evil entirely, we can limit it through appropriate fences. And he talks about fences, building fences around evil. If the evil exists already, which we are not responsible for, in other words, I'm not responsible for Roe versus Wade. I'm not instituting that by, you know, trying to pass a dismemberment ban. I'm not responsible for the first trimester of babies that are dying by a DNC abortion. I mean, that's what the other side of this debate tries to make us look like. Like somehow we're responsible for that. We've instituted that. We've made that legal now. Well, no, it was already legal. There's evil in the world. And he says that if you cannot prohibit a social evil entirely, we can limit it through appropriate fences. And he talks about putting fences around evil. By the way, Romans 13. The government's been given the sword and is a minister of good to do what? To bring wrath against evildoers. The government, the civil government, has one role, and that is to restrain evil and to bring about justice. To be a restraining influence on evil and sin, right? That's it. So in other words, the goal of the civil government is to build fences altogether. And also to outlaw injustice and all that kind of thing. But it's not going to do it entirely as long as we're sinners, right? So here we go. Appropriate fences. Building fences around a social evil as part of a larger strategy to secure justice. Here it is. So you're trying to build these fences as part of a larger strategy to establish justice. The goal is to get there. We just understand we have to build the fences first to get there. We're just not going to be able to throw a Hail Mary and get it done. Precludes what can be prohibited now without limiting the legitimacy of what remains unprohibited. So we're never going to accept the fact that any baby should die. We're not for babies dying. We're just trying to save as many as we can by building these fences on the way to saving them all. And he goes on, by limiting the harm done or lessening the negative consequences, we do not admit or support the rest of the evil that we do not have the power, legally or politically, to touch right now. And I think that is a very good point. We are not admitting to or supporting to the rest of the evil that we don't have the power to end. That is a straw man that's thrown out there by the all or nothing crowd. All right, quickly. Now, as I've said before, the all or nothing folks, which by the way, I'm an and both. I'm for all the abortion bans. I'm supporting those as much as I can, but I'm also going to be for some incremental measures. As I've said, that the all or nothing approach fails because those are willing to sacrifice some in the hope of saving them all. And I say that's not principled. That's not biblical. We save the ones we can in the attempt to eventually saving them all. And the other thing is that even so-called total bans on abortion in the state legislatures across the country, assuming that those would be put into effect and actually enforced, are incremental themselves. Because if you ban abortion in Texas, what about Oklahoma? What about Louisiana? What about, you know, Missouri or whatever? Do we value the babies in Texas more than we do the ones in Missouri or other states? It's discrimination based on geography. So it's incremental. The idea of the abortion bans going state by state by state by state is eventually you're going to have all 50 states, but you're never going to have all 50 at once. And if you wanted all 50 at once, why don't we, if we're really principled, if we really believe in an all or nothing approach to abortion, and we don't believe in this political prudence strategy using incrementalism as a tactic, if we don't believe that, then why aren't we going for a federal ban against abortion? Why not? Why go state by state, which is going to be slower and it's incremental? And inherently, in the words of those who believe in all or nothing, is discriminating based on their, maybe not in their words, but it simply is. It's geographical discrimination to only ban abortion in certain states. We just must, they must not value the ones in the other states. The way to be totally consistent, I guess, if you will, is to go for a federal ban on abortion across the country, all 50 states, all at once. Why don't the all or nothing folks do that? And I'll tell you why. Because they can't. They realize logistically, pragmatically, politically, that it's impossible to do right now. That's why. Otherwise, they do it. So they're pragmatists just like I am and most of those in the pro-life movement. And the other thing is, let's say we banned abortion in America. That's still incremental, because what about the rest of the world? So the idea that they are the purest, the principled ones, the ones that are biblical, the only ones that are moral and ethical, because they only call for a complete and total end to abortion, isn't true. It isn't true, unless they're going to go for a worldwide ban all at once. Anyway, it just overlooks the obstacles, the obvious obstacles that are before us politically. In my view, it's just zeal. It's zeal without knowledge. It's a blind faith, in a sense. It's just ignoring the political realities that are before us. I think you do both. I think we try to ban abortion altogether with these abortion bans as much as we can, and we support the incremental efforts to end it one baby at a time, one piece of legislation at a time. All right, that is enough of that for now, okay? Hopefully. So the Ohio dismemberment abortion ban is now done. It's in the Senate, or out of the Senate. It'll be going to the House of Representatives, hopefully early in the fall. And we expect it, hopefully, to be signed into law in the state of Ohio. And, you know, I don't have a crystal ball as to what's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to, you know, necessarily save lives or not, but I'm willing to try. A lot of people think they know. They have a crystal ball. They can say, oh, this isn't going to save any lives. Well, how do you know that? How do you know that? We've never seen anything like this before. All right, so that's that. Now let's move on to a couple quick announcements as far as the events that are coming up. As you well know, if you've been paying attention to the news, that the healthcare bill is stalled in the United States Senate. It looks like there aren't enough votes to pass it. As it stands, it does include a defunding of Planned Parenthood and the actual elimination of any funding streams for abortion altogether, as the bill stands. But I think there's a likelihood, if not a high probability, that there's going to be pressure put on the U.S. Senate, and specifically Majority Leader McConnell, to pull the defunding of abortion from the bill in order to get it passed, because there are so-called moderates, which are really just liberals, they're really just Democrats, they just have the R after their name, who are not going to vote for a health care bill that defunds Planned Parenthood and ends funding of abortion. They're just not. And so the votes aren't there. And it just seems to me that eventually I think they're going to be faced with, that is, that Leader McConnell is going to be faced with the dilemma of having to possibly pull the funding of defunding of Planned Parenthood from the bill. We don't know that, but in order to keep them honest, what we're going to be doing, we are going to be delivering baby hope to Leader McConnell on July 13. If you want to go to that next slide there, Mr. Producer, there we go. Delivering baby hope is what we're going to be doing. We're going to be going to Washington and also using the U.S. mail to deliver this baby. If you would go ahead and pan back to me. This baby right here, we're going to be delivering this baby with a card that describes the characteristics of this young baby, baby hope here. We're going to be delivering this to every single U.S. senator with a letter from baby hope, compelling, begging, pleading with that senator to not fund Planned Parenthood and give any money to the abortion industry. So, you know, stick around for more information on this. But July 13th is when we're going to Washington to be at Senator McConnell's office, and we'll be delivering these young children, these models of these 8-week babies, to the U.S. senators. Who will likely determine whether we continue to fund or don't fund Planned Parenthood. The second thing is we are going to be helping to support a protest at the Seattle Storm WNBA basketball game. That is going to be occurring on July 17. Now, here's the deal with them. On that date, the Seattle Storm is going to give $5 of every ticket sold on that date to fund Planned Parenthood. And so we want to be out front. We want to make sure that those going inside, those who go to the NBA game, know that part of their ticket sales is going to support Planned Parenthood. Now, you might think, well, why is that important? Why does that matter? $5 a ticket, you know, is that really all that big a deal? Well, here's why it's a big deal. Planned Parenthood sees the writing on the wall. They see that eventually, if not very soon, hopefully, they're going to lose federal funding altogether. So they're trying to find new funding streams for their enterprise, for their organization, Planned Parenthood. And they're turning to sports teams and leagues like the WNBA. And to me, this is the first time it's ever happened, right? Planned Parenthood does not, as far as we know, get funding from any of the sports leagues or teams. The reason why this can be a problem, we saw this with the bathroom issue, right? With the NCAA and the NBA, who put pressure on a governor, I think it was in North Carolina, right, to repeal that bathroom law that was put into effect that basically, you know, had male and female bathrooms. And they were successful in pressuring the governor to water down that law. And here's the deal. I mean, these sports teams, just like Hollywood, have a lot of influence in pop culture. And we've got to nip this in the bud. We need to go after the Seattle Storm and their fans to make it as painful as possible for them to support Planned Parenthood in the hopes that they pull out and they no longer will support them. So we're going to be helping to hold a protest out front of the arena there in the Seattle area, Seattle Storm's arena, on July 17. And finally, so if you want more information on that, we're going to have a Facebook event about that. And then finally, I will be joining along with my team the Operation Save America effort in Louisville, Kentucky, July 22 through 29. Our part in this is we're hoping to put up a Jumbotron in downtown Louisville to help put pressure on the final remaining abortion mill in that city, or for that matter, that state. Kentucky is one of just a few, a handful of states that have one abortion mill left. And so we want to be part of the effort that Operation Save America is leading there in the Louisville area to put pressure to try to stop and close down this final remaining abortion mill in the state of Kentucky. So we're going to be part of that. So mark your calendar if you want to join us and join Operation Save America. We'd love to have you. All right. So we run a little late. You know, I didn't get to many of the cool video clips. Let me think about that. We've got a couple of those I want to play. Oh, you know what? Let's play the, if you would, Mr. Producer, let's play the one from NBC. It's the first video slide. Just to give you a sense of what happened in the hearing room the other day. Of course, we upstaged the abortion folks. I mean, they came out a week prior in their hoods and capes, handmade supposedly. Well, we got there and we occupied the front row of the committee hearing, witnessing to those in the audience and those on the committee that preborn babies should not be dismembered. And we did that by wearing T-shirts of a preborn baby, and it said, "Do not dismember me." Here is the NBC4, the local NBC broadcast news on that particular event. Go ahead and play that clip.
Senate is expected to vote on a bill tomorrow that would further restrict abortions in Ohio. At issue is a procedure known as dilation and evacuation, more commonly referred to as D&E. Thanks for staying with us at 5:30. I'm Colleen Marshall.
I'm Mark Taylor. The bill was passed out of committee today amid protests from competing groups. NBC4's Ted Hart was at the State House and has more.
Yeah, it is considered the safest and most effective method of abortion in the second trimester for women. But abortion
Safe for whom?
Say that the procedure is cruel and inhumane.
The front row of the committee room was filled with supporters of the bill from a group called Created Equal.
We're just going to be here silently witnessing with the visual image of a 20-week baby saying, don't dismember me. That's enough testimony for us.
The back of the room was lined with opponents of the bill dressed as handmaids from the TV series The Handmaid's Tale. The bill would ban the abortion procedure most often used by doctors in the second trimester.
The state of Ohio should be in the practice of making sure that our doctors are providing the best care that they can to the patient, and this bill does the exact opposite of that.
Opponents say the bill will leave doctors with
limited
options to perform abortions, options they say that are less
safe. Not a good image.
The pro-life agenda has steadily chipped away at abortion rights in Ohio, and Right to Life spokesman Mike Ganadakis says this bill is part of a national agenda.
The inhumanity of a dismemberment abortion leaves the rest of Ohio and America in shock.
The bill passed out of committee along party lines, leaving Mallory McMaster frustrated that state lawmakers are compromising doctors' ability to provide the best possible care.
That they're the ones making the decisions about what health care is available to me, that's scary, and it chips away at the trust that I would have for the provider.
And the bill now
goes
to the full Senate for a vote, and that is expected to
happen. There you go. Well, it did. It went to the full Senate, and it was passed 24-9. Now goes to the House and hopefully to the governor's desk. A couple things real quick. We keep talking about doctors and care, abortion care, a procedure. First of all, these are killers, number one. They're not doctors. They're killers. They dismember children. That's what they do. This isn't care to kill a baby. It's not. It's inhumane, it's obviously immoral, and it's murder. And so we talk about it in these flowery terms to try to avoid discussing what's really going on. But it's hard to hide the fact that we're dismembering children, especially when the bill is named that. So we're pleased that the bill has passed the Senate. Now we'll go to the House, this Ohio dismemberment abortion ban. You're going to hear more about it in the fall, so we'll be reporting more on that. And so just a recap here, let's go over the events we've got coming up. If you would go to that scene there. July 13, we're going to be heading to Washington, D.C. as part of Deliver Baby Hope to these U.S. senators that are contemplating the health care bill that would defund Planned Parenthood. We want to put as much pressure as we can to keep that in the bill. Secondarily, on the 17th of July, we're going to be supporting the efforts in Seattle, Washington, to protest the Seattle Storm's involvement in funding of Planned Parenthood. And then we'll be part of the Louisville, Kentucky Operation Save America event on the week of July 22 through 29. We're hoping to put up a large jumbotron in the downtown area and try to help in the efforts to shut down that final and remaining abortion clinic. So that's a whole lot today. I covered a whole lot of ground. I hope you followed us here. We're able to track with what we're talking about. We'll see you next time, 1 p.m. Every Thursday, 1 p.m. here on Facebook and other media platforms. The Mark Harrington Show, your voice of resistance and radio activists. God bless you. God bless America. And remember, America, to bless God.
You've been listening to Mark Harrington, your radio activist.
For more information on how to become a witness against the evil plague in America, call Created Equal at 614-269-7808, 614-269-7808, or go online to createdequal.net,
createdequal.net.
Be sure to tune to The Mark Harrington Show next time for your marching orders
in the culture war.